WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective. I'm your host, Jason Mann, and my guest today for the very first time, it is Patrick Brogan of The Unemployed Historian. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jason. I'm delighted to be here. It's going to be fun to talk about some Hulk Hogan and The Rock.
Indeed. Yeah, we're going to talk about the lesser acclaimed Hulk Hogan versus Rock there. Their second match at No Way Out 2003, and kind of an odd situation because Hogan had just returned to WWE from a, you know, roughly 6 month layover. He came back with the NWO in 2002, and then there was the famous first Hogan Rock match at that WrestleMania, in which the crowd way favored Hogan over Rock, and then Hogan went on sort of a nostalgia good guy thing for a few months until that kind of petered out, and then he was destroyed by Brock Lesnar and then not heard or seen from again until basically a few weeks before the show. You know, he kind of came back and he was mad at Vince McMahon for this, that, and the other thing, and wanted to challenge him to a fight, and then Vince sort of out of nowhere says, no, you're going to fight The Rock instead. And then The Rock shows up in a via satellite interview, which is clearly, you know, taped, as in Rock and Hogan aren't really interacting. Hogan's interacting with The Rock's video, you know, which it kind of makes for an awkward moment, but it is the first real sign of The Rock's new heel shtick, which is amazing.
Yeah. Going back to when Hogan turns up, I seem to remember something in the build up, as I have this on DVD, and I remember one of the promos on the DVD mentions Hogan has this giant contract that is seemingly Vince McMahon is not happy about because Stephanie signed it, and
yes,
that seems to be what brings him back, and but The Rock coming back, it's an interesting thing because he wasn't around either. Obviously He was coming back. He was part-time at this point as well,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, right. He he worked just a little bit after WrestleMania, but not that long. And then he went away, came back for a couple months during the summer, had another title reign, and then lost it to Brock Lesnar right away. And then in the Brock Lesnar-Rock match is the first time that Rock is really seriously booed, and it's more just because it's, you know, Lesnar's the big thing, it's New York crowd, so they're, you know, generally cheer for guys like Lesnar even when they're heels, and Rock's kind of on his way out, and I think some of the resentment of him, you know, doing a lot of movies and not doing a lot of wrestling was starting to begin. But yeah, he hadn't really been around since SummerSlam, so he's just sort of kind of coming back randomly, and I think he was booed. Hogan makes mention of The Rock being booed during the Raw 10th anniversary special, which had just aired right before, you know, not long before this. So, I don't know. It's interesting to see, looking back on it, why the fans were really booing The Rock, because it was kind of a weird organic thing that they just kind of went with, but there didn't seem to be any super big reason for it. I mean, I guess other than, you know, going and doing the movies, but it wasn't like it wasn't like a thing where he was showing up once a year. I mean, he was doing at least a couple months here and there, and then leaving and going back. It was a weird thing for the fans to resent him for.
I think it must have been the first time for this generation of wrestling fan. Actually, we were when Trey Irby on the Crimson Mask and I were talking last night, and weekend we talked about crowds as well. And I was saying to him, and I think it works in here, because the crowds, wrestling fans expect a different thing from their major stars than they have done since the beginning of the Monday Night Wars. They've expected the big stars to be around all the time. And I can assume that the reason The Rock was booed was that the fans weren't used to seeing their big name stars like The Rock not being there, and they resented the fact that he wasn't there. Right. And that just, I doubt they expected it to happen, but it did, because I think the crowd just weren't used to him not being there, and then resented the fact that he was just coming back, and it felt like his films were more important than his wrestling to them, probably.
And that's obviously, you know, there's some online resentment of him now, you know, in 2013, 10 years later, of him. You know, he's champion as we speak, and he, you know, he's barely there, of course. You know, he does, it's WrestleMania seasons, and he, you know, became champion at the Rumble, so he's been around a bit more since then. But yeah, you know, months go by without him being there or really being mentioned. But that really, there's the resentment among the online fans, but as far as the crowds, there's very little to no booing of him at all, which I think is kind of interesting, because you would think, I mean, now maybe they're just sort of more used to the idea of part-time stars in 2013 than they were in 2003, but I don't know.
I think it's in some cases, absence makes the heart grow fonder, and in other cases, it's now he's a sort of in the position that Hulk Hogan was in. And we can talk about this when we get into the match. They're kind of changing, there's a change in dichotomy with the characters in this match as well as from the previous one. But for, it's kind of a nostalgia thing with The Rock being back.
Yeah.
Because there are so many fans now. There are so many fans now who, you know, they loved The Rock when they were the age that John Cena fans, or the demographic that are meant to be John Cena fans, love John Cena. So it's them loving the guy that was around when they were really into wrestling, and they're going to cheer him because he's our guy. I think that's the
reasoning. And in 2002, 2003 was kind of a downslope for WWE. You know, it was less popular. Like, the guys who had been on top forever, I think the audience was starting to, you know, not completely wear on them, but they just weren't the same. You know, it didn't have the same spark. You know, that happened to Austin too. You know, even Undertaker. To most of the guys, there just wasn't quite that same, you know, thing that they were feeling, you know, 4 or 5 years earlier. And it just kind of, I guess it's sort of natural. If you see someone so much, you're going to eventually kind of, they're going to lose their specialness to you. So
they're going to run out of things to do. I think that's why The Undertaker radically shifted from, you know, Dark Side, Prince of Darkness Undertaker to Biker Undertaker.
Sure.
And they tried to shift Steve Austin from good guy to bad guy. And they try, and they did, but they did never really in that time bring anybody new up apart from Triple H.
Yeah, and Kurt Angle to a degree. But
And Kurt Angle,
but
yeah.
Yeah, they certainly had a mixed track record at best of being able to establish the new guys, you know, to be seen as, you know, equal or nearly equal to the, you know, the stars of, you know, a couple years before.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I guess Lesnar would be the only real one where they were able to, I think, strongly successfully do that, and even that was even that had its problems, but
it was temporary.
Yeah, exactly. Really. You know, and obviously he left, you know not long after he became one, so lots of things there. But yeah, but you know, to WWE's credit, I mean, they went with it, and to The Rock's credit, they totally just, you know, they didn't fight it. They brought him back, and he was a villain, and he was so outstanding. It didn't last long. It was really only a couple of months, but he was terrific.
The character leans itself naturally to this kind of thing. After all, the Rock character started off as a bad guy, so the natural motions of the character are dictated towards not being a very nice person. So it works naturally for The Rock to be a heel. It's just, it wasn't until that point particularly necessary for the narrative to have him in that position.
Sure.
But when he did come into that position, it was brilliant. I mean, the entrance video alone is worth
it. It was 62 seconds before anything actually happens in the entrance video. It's just all video clips of buildings and of this epic thing. And then finally you hear if you smell and repeatedly the music comes on. And then there's the whisper, is cooking, and then he walks out. It's great. It's so epic and pretentious and just – It's wonderful. It's wonderful in its awfulness.
I'm actually reminded of, I think Drew McIntyre used to have this incredibly long intro too, and it was too good for Drew McIntyre. This over the top long intro thing that even with the Rock has in this match and in this run, it's just delightfully heelish. It's heat,
yes, right.
I think to use the terminology. I mean, you're going to boo that. You're going to boo someone not, you know, taking their sweet time to come
sure.
out. Even their music right. is taking its sweet time to start.
Yeah. Just demanding that, you know, that treatment and that old Hollywood thing. So, but before we get into the match, I want to talk a little bit about the satellite promo that rocked us. I think it's interesting because that's really his first interaction with the crowd, and it's essentially his heel turn. He interrupts Hulk Hogan via satellite, and they're in Philadelphia, so he insults cheesesteaks and says that he really likes Tampa Bay tofu, which, if I recall correctly, the reason that is booed is because Tampa Bay and Philadelphia, the Eagles, they had a NFL rivalry, probably had a game. I'm not a big NFL fan, but I'm assuming they were both good at that point, and I'm assuming there was some sort of game in which Tampa Bay beat the Eagles, or they were, you know, headed that way. And then The Rock, he actually mentions, like, you know, he says it's wonderful to be back with the people. I love it. And then he's like, but I've noticed some of you are booing me, and he's not thrilled about it. And then he complains about the fact that Philadelphia has, you know, booed all these great athletes in the past, like Mike Schmidt and so on and so forth. But the fact that they've never booed Hogan, you know, bothers him. And I just love the way that he like, you know, he does his spiel and so forth, and it's mostly talking down to the audience, though he's still doing kind of some of his, like, entertaining stuff that I think the crowd is meant to find funny. But then the way he just interrupts Hogan and talks down to him and is like, okay, now, you know, now I'll listen, you know, but don't take too long. Don't, you know, don't bore me. Just kind of get to the end part, and then sort of makes, you know, light of Hogan's shtick and does the, you know, what you're going to do and does the posing and stuff. And then if he, rather than listening to Hogan's whole spiel, he leaves because, you know, in fact, the tofu is ready. So there's a woman who he's talking to, off camera that, is preparing for it. So I found all that great, even though the actual interaction between Rock and Hogan is a bit clunky because of the, you know, just the satellite delay and just the way, you know, the way they have to do it, but it's still pretty great.
I as you've been talking through that, I don't think I've seen that one. I've seen their face-to-face interaction.
Oh, okay.
The one from SmackDown.
Oh, okay.
Just before the pay-per-view, the Thursday before. I didn't realize there was another one.
Oh, okay. That's the initial one. I apparently couldn't find that one because that one I didn't see. Well, tell me about that one. Well, let me finish this one and then talk about that one. Basically, the rest of it is that Hogan, basically after that, he, you know, kind of, you know, he talks down Rock a little bit. Then he runs down the fact that, you know, Vince won't fight him and Vince had done a diatribe the previous week about how Hogan, you know, Hulkamania was nearly dead and that Hogan was a liar and, you know, sycophant and all about the money and blah, blah, blah. And then Hogan essentially says that Vince is full of shit, which is bleeped. But he refers to The Rock as the Rock of Jabroni, which I'm not sure if I find that just amusing or confusing. But it's But you know, it works. I feel like I noticed in this that Hogan, and I don't know how it feels with the live one, but that Hogan is very, he seems stilted, not just in the interaction with the satellite, but also in trying to deliver this promo, which is kind of overwritten and is a little convoluted. I mean, I feel like Hogan had a difficulty translating to the new way in which, WWE was doing promos, which, started roughly, in 2000, 2001, 02 era. And obviously Hogan, only having had a relatively little time in WWE, even at this point.
Well, I don't think his natural verbal really works in that more natural dialogue setting, because he's a very over the top speaker. He's very, his tropes of brother Jack, these words that he spouts, dude, all these words he spouts through things. He's more comfortable, I think, with the traditional stand up. Has a microphone, is being interviewed, has lots of buzzwords to throw out rather than trying to actually have this sort of face-to-face debate thing, which is more of what the wrestling stuff, more of what the television style as of the 2000s kind of is, if that makes any
Yeah,
sense.
no, I it definitely does. I mean, I've seen him do good ones more in his regular voice, and when he was the initial years of the NWO, the first year in particular, he did have some really good promos. Obviously not doing the Hulkamania shtick because he was a new character, and eventually kind of developed that Hollywood shtick. But you're right. I mean, the ones that we primarily think of as his most memorable ones are these big, over the top, catchphrase laden, well, Mean Gene, kind of thing. So, but it was it did seem, it was notable to me because I usually think even in the situations where, even outside of that, I generally think of Hogan as a better promo than that, and it wasn't completely bad, but it was definitely like he was. It definitely didn't feel like him.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one, but from the SmackDown one that is the right before the pay-per-view, where Hogan comes down to the ring, he talks about they're going. It's a confrontation between the two of them, and again Hogan says, "The Rock of Jabroni," which they really like that word. It's ridiculous, but it's Hulk Hogan ridiculous, so it kind of works. And like, really, what happens in that is they talk about the kind of the Rock isn't happy. Hulk Hogan is like, he isn't happy that Hulk Hogan is like riding bleeped as Hulk Hogan is really riding a wave of Hulkamania that the Rock brought back by giving him this by having this match with him at the previous WrestleMania, and that like everything he's doing, the fact that all the fans love him, the fact that his whole career has been reborn is all down to the Rock. And in the end, as Hogan is getting angry at the fact that the Rock is making fun of him doing this silly Hulk Hogan impression, and he goes to rip off his shirt, and the Rock kind of backs away. And the Rock does some great shtick, like he grabs a bottle of the people's water and he starts drinking it, and as he's backing away, he says like, Hogan, I've known you for years. I respect you. We're gonna, no matter what, in this match, we'll have a great match. I always said, anytime, any place. Puts out his hand. Hogan goes to shake it, but The Rock spits water in his face and backs away. And that's pretty much what it is. And Hogan doesn't do much talking in it, from what I remember of it. I don't have many notes about it, other than him, being angry at The Rock. It's mostly The Rock talking and Hogan getting angry. And Hogan and The Rock really do that job well. They really, Hogan really does a lot of looking at the camera, looking at the audience, just showing, okay, I am not angry. I am not happy with this, with what The Rock is saying about me. And The Rock really does this great, you know, I don't really care. I'm bigger than all of this stuff. And he has this amazingly giant belt buckle, and he's wearing that weird, he's wearing leather pants and a leather waistcoat thing, and he looks kind of ridiculous. But Hulk, but that was just my noticing.
Sure.
Like I just want to note that he was giant, massive belt buckle, which just seemed so ostentatious.
Yes.
But it is an effective segment in that basically they don't get physically altercating. Hogan really shows that he's angry, and The Rock shows that he's, you know, he's being a bad guy now. He does bad guy things, and he retreats from Hogan after spitting in his face. And it's a successful segment. Again, it showed off the good things that The Rock can do, and then Hulk Hogan can do, and how good they are at their jobs.
Yeah, and they certainly had chemistry together.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously it was immediate from you know, in their first feud. Just the great confrontation that they had, you know, where Hogan was challenged by The Rock, and of course, you know, the great match they had. I mean, I, you know, certainly aided by an amazing crowd, but you know, they kept that crowd invested in the match, and they, you know, they performed, you know, great. Maybe not in a technical way, but in a way of just, you know, understanding how to, you know, how to keep that crowd alive and understanding, you know, what beats to hit and, you know, so on and so forth. It's a, you know, terrific match. Now this match does not quite live up to that really at all, unfortunately. I mean, I don't think it's terrible by any means, but it's not, it's just very, it's pretty short. You know, just kind of there, the structure of it's a little strange. And Rock is outstanding as a villain, really just over the top in a wonderful way. But beyond that, there's not much to it. And I don't think the finish really was just kind of more convoluted than it needed to be, I think.
I think the match is really just a means to get to the end of it.
Sure.
Mostly. Yeah. I think that the ultimate, we can get to that when we get to the end, but the ultimate result was obviously Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon at WrestleMania. Right. It basically was just to get this big match out of the way, and then, because they can, and then do this because this is the longer term plan. I don't think you could ever capture, you know, WrestleMania 18 again. Anyway, it was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah,
for want of a better phrase.
But I do think, you know, I would have expected a little more than this. Just as far as more substance to the match. Maybe not a better match, but more, a little more depth to the match. Because it only goes roughly, I think, 12, 13 minutes or so. You know, which is not by modern main event standards, it's pretty short, and it really just doesn't feel very big, you know, for whatever reason. The crowd really is not, I mean, you know, they react a lot to Hogan's entrance, and they, you know, they boo Rock, you know, pretty well, but it doesn't feel like there's a whole lot of heat in the match itself.
I think that's probably down to the fact that it was such a quick build, because the other match had a fairly quick build. I think it's really just down to that the second time around, it's difficult to redo all the good things of the first
sure.
match. And the fact that the roles are very much different. The Rock's in a new role, Hogan is in a new role. They're very much flip-flopped in what they're trying to achieve.
Sure. Well, Hogan's basically in the same role because, you know, essentially he did technically go into the match as a heel, but the moment that the match happened, he was the babyface. Or I guess I shouldn't quite say that, because there is the moment in the first one where, you know, he sort of hulks, you know, he hulks up, and that's kind of the, you know, the real signal that the old Hulk Hogan is back. So, yeah, I guess, you know, he's kind of more you know, he's playing it pretty much the good guy, and he's reacted to it as the good guy, but he does, there is sort of a transformative moment in that match, which, you know, he transforms into the character that he basically is now. So
I think this feeds in, this match, as it starts off, it does feel very much like an old WWF Hulk Hogan match in a little bit, just for the very start. Maybe we can get into it more.
Let's go ahead and talk about it then. Michael Cole and Taz are our announcers. Michael Cole is he's in rare form. My favorite cheesy Michael Cole line is he's talking about how Rock has never been the same since Hogan got the reaction at WrestleMania, and talking about how Rock's been a jerk all these times. And then he says, "It seems to me that Hulk Hogan has become the people's champion."
Just
in this like really cheesy voice. It's like, oh, Michael Cole, you try so hard, but you just, you know, it just never really feels quite genuine with you. You know, the only time it really felt genuine was when you were being a jerk.
He has just general announcer voice to him. He feels unnatural. And,
yeah.
Whereas maybe from Jim Ross, you can kind of get away with that because he has a sort of charm to him.
Right.
Michael Cole.
Michael Cole, I don't think Michael Cole is generally terrible. He's generally, you know, acceptable, but it's just funny how that tone and how seeming like you care about it makes a big difference. And it's hard thing to fake, I guess. Or maybe he does care, but he's just not good at conveying it. I don't know. But, you know, it's just interesting how that works. But we get big Hogan chance to start. They're crazy into the entrance, which is Voodoo Child. I don't remember if he kind of went back and forth between that and, you know, Real American or what the deal with that at, you know, I think maybe when he came back, you know, he was using Real American in 2002, but when he came back here, he might have been using Voodoo Child again.
From what I remember, and being quite a big Hulk Hogan fan, I have to say, I do remember that when he came back, he used Voodoo Child, except for at the, I think it was on the 4th of July SmackDown, he used Real American. Then he used Voodoo Child for this return. And I think subsequently, afterwards, he went back to using Real American again.
Okay. What did he use as Mr. America?
He used Real American.
He used Real American as Mr. America. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yes.
So, all right.
As if to lampshade it even more.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And Rock immediately is delaying things out of the ring, getting into it with the crowd, seeming upset about the reaction, about the fans not cheering him and not looking particularly interested at getting it on with Hogan. Then Hogan turns around and Rock slides in the ring, tries to sneak up on him. But then Hogan turns around and Rock's facial expression of first like being, you know, being caught by Hogan. And then when Hogan, you know, says, you know, no, 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 this isn't going to happen. Rock's like, you know, mocking him. Doing the exact same thing and the mocking is just it's awesome.
Is this the point where, you know, this is before he is this when he takes the bandana?
No, that's later. The initial moment when he tries to slide in and then tries to attack him, and then the sneak attack doesn't work, and then Rock first being kind of sheepish and then being like, you know, yeah, what are you, Hulk Hogan? Rock's able to avoid the big boot, then goes out and stalls some more. They mentioned at this point that Rock is a 6-year pro and Hogan is a 25-year pro. And they hammer home the fact that Hogan is a 25-year pro enough that I feel like that is, I don't know if that's just like a making him just seem old type thing, which they sometimes do when they're, you know, kind of pissed at somebody, but still having them around because, you know, they realize their value, or if it's just something they were just saying for whatever reason, or, you know, obviously we don't know, but I, I, I think the number of times in which that was said, which I think was 4 to 5 times, there was a reason behind them saying it.
I actually didn't catch that. I caught that they mentioned the many times they've been both champion, which was at the time I think somewhat comparable.
Yeah, I think Rock was like a 7 or 8 time champion, and Hogan was a 6 time champion.
I think when they mentioned the fact that Hogan is, has been around this long, The Rock has been around this long. I mean, it could be one of those subtle
Yeah.
commentary
Well,
digs at age,
here's the
but
thing, that they're rarely that specific with years.
that is true. It's very likely that, Vince McMahon was saying, say he's been running the business for 25 years in Michael Cole's ear. But I think what it does do is just bring home that Hogan is a veteran, which which is, although not really part of the match, come to think about it. I mean, the fact that Hulk Hogan is a veteran doesn't really play into the story. So I think you could be right. I think it could just be a thing they did to, say Hulk Hogan is old, because the character never really ages. He's always Hulk Hogan, no matter what. He's not like
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, but he's
Right. I
old.
mean they acknowledge that he's older. They acknowledge it, at certain points, but it's not, yeah, they are careful not to call him old generally because, that's not something they want to do. You don't want, to hammer that home with people because, unless it's like a he's a legend at the he's, in the twilight of his career if you're having that kind of story, but it's not really that kind of story, Maybe it's implied somewhat, but yeah, I don't think that's really what they were going for. So I just interesting, that they would do that outside normal operating procedure, feels like. So finally, Hogan gets outside, chases after the Rock, punches him a bit. Rock is able to slide back in and stomps and punches down Hogan. Fans boo the Rock's every move. And then Cole mentions Sylvain Grenier of Montreal as the ref. He said he refereed the Velocity match as well. Again, they of course rarely name the referees in certain circumstances. I watched this match actually as it happened. It was one of the few pay-per-views that I would have just happened to watch as it happened at the time. For whatever reason, I saw this one and didn't really even. Notice that there was a different referee, didn't even, pay attention to that at all. And that obviously comes into play here in the match. But I was surprised that they even mentioned it. Although I guess, if somebody was like, I don't recognize that referee, they might serve to explain to someone who, pays attention to those details.
I think I would have noticed that it was a different referee, actually.
Yeah.
Although when I was watching this back, I didn't notice. But a lot of the time, I would notice, this is a main event. Why isn't it? I don't know. At the time, probably wouldn't or would have been Earl Hebner or somebody. So you kind of think, why isn't this the standard referee? And
Yeah.
why is it this guy we've never heard of before? Because they do mention at the kind of not mentioning referees is a very recent thing that they've started doing again.
I mean, they've gone kind of back and forth in that because if you watch like some of the even like some of the early 90s, late 80s stuff, like they will occasionally mention the referees, but there are a lot of times where they won't mention the referee's name. And
There always
call
wanted
him
to,
referee
sorry.
or so. I think it's hit or miss depending on what era, but I do think it's generally a thing they don't like to do unless there's a real purpose of doing it.
I think there were certain referees, especially at that period, who were you would notice. There was always like Tim White and Teddy Long and Mike Chioda and Jimmy
Nick
Corrales and
Patrick.
D Nick Patrick and Earl Hebner, who would be instantly recognizable referees.
Yeah, I guess
So,
most of them, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Sylvain Grenier kind of comes out of left field,
Right.
so for reasons which will become
Yeah.
apparent.
I like I said, I didn't notice enough for that to foreshadow anything, but I'm sure someone could have picked that up. Like, weird that they have that referee there. So Hogan gets a bit of control, rams Rock's face into the corner 9 times, then puts the bad mouth on him, and then hits the 10. Odd, and this may just be I'm thinking more how WCW shot these. like the camera angle seems very far. Like, you know, like with the WCW, like ramming, you know, when they would ram the guy's face in there, usually you would kind of get the corner camera and you'd get the close up right there. But this was like on the other side, pretty far away. You couldn't really see Hogan's face, which was kind of important there. In WWE's camera work is usually so sound that I just kind of noticed that one as being a little bit off.
They do tend to shoot the kind of the corner stuff from behind though, because the you I mean ramming someone's head into the turnbuckle isn't something that happens too much. Usually it's the kind of 10 punch thing,
Well,
and they usually do shoot it from
I feel like
behind.
they do it from behind, or they do it from like underneath. Like they'll have like the camera that's on the floor looking up at it. But in this case, it was basically like a wide shot almost, and you know, it was like shot from the other side. It was just might have been the hard camera. I'm not I don't exactly, you know, I'm the no no the setups perfectly, but it just stood out to me as being a strange, you know, thing. You know, again, their production is generally so awesome that, you know, any minor thing like that is noticeable.
It's certainly a thing that that is odd. You think they would catch that this would be a better shot for it, but
And
I did think that myself,
I don't know,
actually.
and I think one of the things I think of when I think of Hogan's style is kind of how he does that, and how, and I can think of the close-ups in my mind of that. And so I guess that's why it was notable for me as well, because I'm used to seeing it in a different way.
Yeah, I think that I would agree it was an odd choice. And I remember the Dave Lagana podcast he used to do, where he before WrestleMania 1 year he had all of these cameramen and things on it, and it was a really fascinating thing to hear the how they would kind of learn how to do this thing technically, and just for them to miss something like that seems a little bit like someone just pushed the wrong button in the truck
Yeah,
or
you know,
something.
who knows, but or maybe the yeah, but I just yeah, noticeable thing. So Hogan then does the spit punch, which sends Rock over the top rope. Then Rock is able to drop Hogan's throat on the ropes, and he falls backward. Hogan's bandana finally falls off. Hogan is up slowly, and then Rock hits the rock bottom at a very early point in the match, maybe 5 minutes in,
Yeah.
which only gets to, even Taz, you know, mentions like, wow, that's really early, and then Hogan is able to you know, kick out of it at two.
It's
And then Rock puts the bandana on, struts around, grabs Hogan's weightlifting belt, and repeatedly, you know, nails him over and over in the back.
Yeah, this I have written down. Shouldn't this be a disqualification technically, because you're using a guy's belt against him? I also didn't think the rock bottom was particularly crisp. It seemed very like Hogan kind of turned into a big it got very rigid when it was being done. He just kind of
Yeah, I think Hogan. I mean, obviously, you know, he had a hard time taking some of those, you know, big back moves. Not that the rock bottom's like a huge move, but you're planting the guy, and you have to land on your back. So, yeah, you know, that was one of the things that Hogan would occasionally, you know, be stiff and rigid on.
And the belt whipping thing seemed something that the rules of the match, as far as I'm aware, were just a regular match, but apparently you could take off somebody's belt and whip them
Yeah.
with it.
Well, we were still in the era in which you most of the main events by default, even if they weren't no DQ, they essentially were.
That's a fair point,
You know,
yeah.
because you most of the main event matches would have a big table spot, and you know, you would get chairs involved. I think I consider a belt kind of like the referee should take it away from the guy, but it's not necessarily like a disqualification, where a chair would be an automatic disqualification if you hit the guy in the ring with it, or even outside, although then, you know, we'll see later there is some chair using on the outside.
It's just that this Montreal referee is not very good at his job,
No, he's not
apparently.
very calm. This Sylvain fellow, I don't trust him. I think maybe, you know, we should watch out and see what he does.
I think so. He could be up to
He could
something.
be. Cole makes reference to Rock's tattoo being new, which I kind of forgot about. He wasn't. I don't think he had like the full arm tattoo yet. It wasn't as big as it would get, but it was definitely, it was, it was new. He had a significant portion of it. So, it's almost. I'm so used to it now. I almost forgotten which, most of his wrestling career he did not have it.
It wasn't quite the whole. I think it goes across his from his like his shoulder or his elbow up to his kind of bicep area
Right, yeah,
now,
now.
but it was just the shoulder at that
Right,
point.
yeah. So, he repeatedly nails Hogan, then grabs a bottle of water and drinks it. And then I like that Hogan pops up and clotheslines Rock, and then the water goes flying everywhere. That's a nice,
Oh
that's a cool
yes,
visual, you know? And
it was great.
then Rock, and then Hogan grabs his own belt and then whips Rock repeatedly, and Rock's anguish here is just it is about as over the top as you could possibly get. It's really funny. It's really but it's not. I mean, it's comical, but I don't think it's like to the point where it's hurting the match because it's comical. I mean, I think it's funny, but it's also it's funny in a way of a guy getting his comeuppance, and not necessarily just funny because he's overdoing it, even though he's overdoing it.
It works, I think, too, because I felt watching it like, wow, it looks like Hulk Hogan's really hitting him very hard with that belt, from to because it sounded really good, and two, The Rock was just really good at reacting to it. I always think The Rock, I'm not a gigantic fan of him, but I do think he always did little things like that well. Like when he would be laid out on the ground, he would always sort of twitch. Which I always felt was a nice little addition to this, to being kind of laid out by a chair. Like I'm unconscious, but I'm have a nervous twitch going on. And he always did the little things are always really interesting, and that was a really good little thing about
Yeah,
that one
yeah.
moment.
Hogan did that too. I think Hogan kind of had the similar thing. I mean, Hogan and Rock both, they lacked like the technical acumen, and they lacked, certain things in their matches, but were able to make up for it by just, understanding how to work the crowd and understanding the subtle things and, the facial expressions and, obviously the whole package. And they're just their
Exactly.
presence and their body language.
And that's something that is very important about any performance. I mean, when you're performing in anything, like I've done a little bit of theaters, or not very theater stuff, but light entertainment stuff, and I've done public speaking, and I do a show that is involved with me sitting in front of a camera. So, you have to use your face. You have to use the space around you to indicate to people what's going on. It's not just about being able to, do all the technical things.
Right, yeah. So, there are big Hogan chants at this point. Hogan, however, misses the running clothesline off the ropes. Rock lands a DDT, which looked really good, and Hogan took it well.
It looked good. I liked the pose afterwards. Well, the Rock does this. If you smell pose, which just it fit the moment perfectly, the way he got up and
Yeah,
posed.
he kipped up and then gives the fans. Yeah, I was thinking it was almost like a William Regal type look. But yeah, you're right. It was kind of the nose up in the air and the if you smell type thing. And then right afterward, he grabs his back a little bit, like ow, oh my back kind of thing, which I thought was which was funny too.
Yeah.
And then he soaks the crowd in a bit more while kicking Hogan's back. Then he grabs a charter, which this being Montreal, which I'm not sure we mentioned, that we're in Montreal, and it is booed significantly, as a heel doing a sharpshooter in Montreal would be, reminding, of course, of the famous Montreal screw job. And it's not a good sharpshooter because The Rock does not do a good sharpshooter, but it's sort of beside the point. Hogan drags himself into the ropes, but Rock sort of pulls him back anyway without the ref breaking the ropes. I guess another sign that maybe this ref is not necessarily the best at his job.
One of this kind of blow-in Montreal referee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know why they would trust the local referee with such a big match. That seems very strange, doesn't it?
It seems very counterproductive, and you know, for such a large company to have this rookie referee refereeing this very highly important match. And something I just realized: the two Rock Hogan matches both take place in Canada, which is very interesting.
Yeah, and of course Montreal was, I believe it was the night after Raw, in which Hogan just gets the giant, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, reaction I've ever heard from a crowd of them doing a standing ovation for him, like for 5 minutes, where he's just barely able to talk in the ring because of just that, the adulation that people feel for him after that night in Toronto. I mean, it's just two of the most amazing crowd reactions back to back. And of course, you know, Hogan was, you know, Toronto was one of the WWF strongholds in the 80s, after they expanded, Hogan and Orndorff did that huge, 68,000 people in, they didn't have the Sky Dome yet, but whatever the stadium was before then. But yeah, it is sort of interesting that both of them were in, Canada, kind of a quirky thing. Certainly there were cities in the U.S. that would have, that would have reacted to Hogan similarly. But I guess Canada tends to be passionate in its wrestling, at least, particularly the territory, the cities that were strong in their territories, which Toronto had a, thriving territory for a long time. Montreal did as well. Of course, Western Canada with, Stampede and even Vancouver, those all were big wrestling cities. So, so go Canada.
Go Canada.
Yeah. Oh, Canada, you get all the great matches, don't you? Eventually Hogan fades and his arm drops twice, but as it is lifted on the third try, Hogan puts one finger in the air and turns his hand, and he powers out, and the Rock tumbles all the way to the floor and has a nice look of being stunned that this has happened.
It's the power of Hulkamania is rising through Hulk Hogan right at that time. I think that's when they mentioned he starts feeding off the energy of the crowd, because that's how Hulkamania apparently works. It's this giant energy that Hulk Hogan gets from people, and this is why I love Hulk Hogan. This crazy thing,
it's the adrenaline and the people, man. Hulkamania is about the people. Hulk Hogan has become the true people's champion.
Exactly, as Michael Cole so aptly put it.
Exactly. So, then Hogan is limping outside. Hogan clotheslines him, and then I love Rock's little clapping dance to mock the crowd. He's almost doing like a little jig, and clapping his hands as he's doing it, just for a second. But it's a wonderful little. I don't think I've ever seen him do it before or since, but it's pretty great.
You got to think he was having fun doing this.
Absolutely.
You have to.
Yeah.
Just this chance to cut loose after so long of, well, obviously he must have enjoyed it a little bit, but just the chance to do all these little things that were just silly and going to make people boo him. Must have been delightful for
him.
Go ahead. As it must have been for anybody, like Hulk Hogan, even when he became a heel.
Hogan, the first few months of him being, a heel, even in the first, year and a half, he does a lot of wonderful things, and it is great. And yeah, the first few months of that in particular are just so fun. Rewatching some of that stuff, it really has changed my opinion of Hogan from that era. More of that I watched were 98, 99 when it was getting tiresome. And the early days of that really are a treat. And, and Rock only had, roughly 2.5 months of it, but it was, the whole thing was great.
Yeah.
So Rock tries to smash Hogan with a chair, but it ends up nailing the corner. Hogan then gets the chair and smacks Rock with it. Then they both end up back in the ring. The ref takes the chair away from Hogan as he's trying to wield it, and then Rock is able to use the distraction and get a low blow. Then Rock hits the spine buster. He and then poses for the people's elbow, which draws large boos. He hits the first one, then pops up and lands a second one, which I love. Just a cocky gesture of, you know, doing it again. And then Hogan powers up and is hulking up and pops up, impervious to the punches. We've all seen this before. More shaking. Rock tries to fight, then sort of does the, not the finger flip off, but the other type of flip off, the T-type flip off. And Hogan then lands his punches, nails the big boot. He plays the crowd for a bit and hits the leg drop. And there's one, two, and the lights go out.
Something nefarious has happened. And what I just remembered is that Michael Cole called the people's elbow the "I'm in love with myself" elbow.
Which actually was okay for Michael Cole. That one I thought was good, you know?
It was not a catchy title, but, it, you know, he tried.
It communicated what it needed to communicate, I think.
It did. It did. And the lights have gone out, and what could happen next? Who knows?
But as the lights come on, now Hogan is standing. Rock and the referee are both down. There's a chair in the ring. Hogan looks confused. Then he decides to try to revive the referee. And then, lo and behold, Vince McMahon walks down on the ramp with an expression of confusion. The crowd takes this opportunity to chant "You screwed Brett" at him. He makes it down fairly quickly. Hogan yells at Vince and tries to get to the bottom of this scheme. The ref then slides Rock the chair, pretends to be unconscious again, and then nails Hogan in the face. Michael Cole screams, "Somebody tell me what the hell is going on!" He's very upset.
It is sort of confusing from the outset, like when Vince McMahon arrives, what is going on, because The Rock is down, Hogan is standing up, Vince McMahon has come out. They do a good thing of just, I'm not sure, but probably intentional just to confuse you, and it does confuse you. Like, why is Vince McMahon confused? Because you'd think if they were going to give away immediately, this was all part of the plan, he'd be kind of coming out grinning.
Right.
But he doesn't. And it does lead to a moment of genuine, who is actually this benefiting? Did Hulk Hogan do this? Did did Vince do this? Did The Rock do this? Did Sylvain Grenier do this?
Well, you know, he's a Montreal referee. He would never do anything to betray his hometown, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll talk about the whole scenario, and then I'll get into why I think it was overdone and what would have been simpler and probably more effective. But so Vince plays confused once more. I think we're meant to think that Vince is clearly, you know, being facetious, though, in his confusion. You know, I don't think anyone's supposed to think of it, but it happens pretty quickly, and it is a little bit, you know, it's like, oh, why is this referee I've never heard of helping The Rock? What is going on? Rock waits for Hogan to get up, lands the rock bottom, and then Grenier pops up suddenly and gets the three count for the win. And Vince raises both the Rock's and Grenier's hands, and they play to the crowd. They walk out together. Rock shakes Vince's hand. I mean, he was already a heel, but this, you know, he had been, you know, just mean before. Now he's actually engaging in nefarious acts with the top villain. So I think there's no question now that, you know, he's the villain for sure.
And Michael Cole does recall the Jim Ross shaking hands with the devil line when he does the shake. And one thing The Rock does I quite like is there was some of Hulk Hogan is bleeding from the chair shot, and there was obviously, and there was some of Hulk Hogan's blood on Rock's arm, and he just casually wipes it off while they're backing away. It just made for a really good visual at that moment.
Yeah, yeah. So, and then Vince decides to go back into the ring. He takes his off his jacket, stands over Hogan. Hogan tries to use Vince to sort of prop himself up, but Vince then pie faces him down. And then he tears off his shirt, and he has a Hulk Hogan style shirt, but it says what you gonna do, and then has a big nothing over it, and then I'm trying to remember what was on the back of it exactly, but it was very strange.
It says brother
Brother
sucks,
sucks.
which makes no
Not at all.
sense.
No, it was very odd, but Vince then mocks Hulk's posing, and then eventually his music plays. He backs away into the to the entrance, slowly backs away so the camera can look at him and then see Hogan angry, and they can sort of be looking at each other. And that is your, one of your, but probably honestly the match that WrestleMania 19 was built around, Hogan and Vince, which I think was a questionable decision at best, but what's that?
I think it worked actually. I think it was a fun match,
Yeah, no,
personally. I enjoyed it.
I would say it's a pretty fun match. What I think is that marketing it around that match, I think, was a bad decision, and I think presenting Vince as close to a physical equal with Hogan, I don't think anyone really wanted to see that.
That's probably a good. A good assessment of it, though, because that is a questioning thing, as he is a non-wrestling character. I also noticed that there was a, just because I wouldn't notice this, someone had a terribly spelled sign that said Vince Scrud Brett
Ah,
in the crowd.
nice, nice. Well, there you go.
Scrud spelled Scrud.
You would think you would have an easier time with that. It seems like it's a phrase that has been done well long enough that you'd be able to learn how to spell it, but apparently not.
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada, indeed. So yeah, I don't know. Like I any time I don't know. Almost any time the lights go out in a wrestling match, I groan. I know it's obviously been done, and I always feel like it's just pretty much it's done. I know ECW's done it effectively a few times, but I don't know. That's just one of those things that always bugs me whenever it's done, because it's just like it's one of those things that you can't really like explain at all. I guess in this case you could explain, okay, Vince controls the lights and he did it. I guess in this one there is actually like a little bit of logic behind it. But I don't know. It just seemed like it was an overly convoluted master plan, in which, they could have done it in a better ways. And honestly, I don't really see why they just didn't make Vince the special referee and have.
The only way I can think of that is that they wanted to obviously do a pastiche of the Montreal screw job with a referee involved who wasn't Vince
Yeah.
McMahon. They wanted to have the referee
Yeah,
there.
and obviously it was just way tiresome to do another Montreal rehash again, for the 50th time, and so on and so forth. So I don't know. I just think if they had just if they had just had Hogan, or if they just had Vince either be the referee or just somehow come in and hit Hogan with a chair or something, or do something more direct to screw over Rock, rather than have all these shenanigans that you didn't really add up to much. I mean, I guess maybe the idea was to create a heel based on this with Grenier, but that obviously didn't really work, and they didn't really do any follow up to link him with Vince after this, I don't think. I mean, he basically just sort of went into La Resistance, and that was and that was that, and they were I guess they had some heat and they were champions for a while, but it wasn't like a thing that ever was, below, was ever above opening match.
So the thing with the lights going on and off, it all it does is add some extra confusion. And I guess that they were going for confusion, but they could have easily have it been, Vince appears on the ramp and Silva and Grania gets the chair and hits Hogan with it or something. They could have it, the lights going on and off was not wholly necessary to tell the story they ended up telling. It's just there to sort of throw you a curveball,
Yeah.
as far as I can see.
Yeah, I guess I'm not a fan of curveballs for curveballs' sakes. Like, if there's this curveball for a reason, and I guess the reason is they want to play off Montreal, but that's not a very good reason.
And it was like double playing off Montreal because they were playing off Montreal in Montreal. It was.
Exactly, yeah. But I just feel like that was played out too, you know, so.
Yeah, well, it was. I think everyone and their mother had done a Montreal screw job type thing since it had happened.
Sure. Yeah. So, but I don't think it's not like this is, terrible to watch or anything. It's quick. It's, reasonably entertaining. It doesn't add up to a whole lot. And you're very much right where this is just something they kind of ran through to get to the next thing. But Rock's antics I think are worth seeing, and it's not a match. It's not a match you have to watch, but it's not necessarily a bad match to watch either.
I'd agree. I think, like I said at the beginning, that parts of it feel like a proper old Hulk Hogan match where the Rock is sort of cower the heel Rock is cowering away from the from Hulk Hogan, and
Yeah, you.
there are fun little bits in it here and there about of them both interacting and the Rock being this new bad character and Hogan being Hogan. It is fun. It's fun, but it's not substantial.
No, yes, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, I think Rock plays a decent Paul Orndorff here, or Rick Rude, or or pick the heel, but or actually better than decent, a good one. But and I do agree, it does kind of fit. There are some of the trademark Hogan spots, and so forth, and it does feel sort of like this could have existed in 1990, very easily, but yeah, so I would say people, it's a decent one to check out. Nothing super exciting, but it has a, I think it has a reputation of being a terrible match, and I don't think it is at all.
I think that just comes from the fact that it has this Montreal rehash ending, which is people kind of roll their eyes at now at this
Yeah,
point.
and it in no way lived up to the expectations of the first one. Lived up to, what that did. So that's obvious. In contrast to that, yeah, it's not, it's nothing compared to that. But as far as being solid, it's, it's a fine match. But so anything else that you anything else you want to mention before we get into the Twitter questions?
Well, I just think that like, I was going that in its own context. I'm a big fan of looking at things in their context. In its own context, this is a fine match. It's not, I mean, No Way Out 2003 is not the greatest pay-per-view in the world, but it's a fine. The Rock Hogan thing is a fine match. This one of its, oh, for what it is, it's not going to be the same thing as the WrestleMania match. It was never going to be. I think that to just dismiss it because of its Montreal screwjob ending is a little unfair. And sure, the ending does mar it a bit, but there are bits of fun in it and enjoy and entertainment in it. The Rock's music,
Yes.
the Rock's heelness, the Hoganness. It all it comes together to make a nice little. Not substantial, but decent affair.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, let's take some Twitter questions. First, we'll start with Star of Savage. He asks, how glad are we that there was no Hogan Warrior 2 in WWE? There obviously was one years later in WCW, but there was not one in WWE.
I really liked the one match they had. I think I love that match. The WrestleMania, what was it,
It was
five
six.
match,
WrestleMania
was it?
six, yeah.
Six. WrestleMania six match between Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. So much that I did go and watch the entire WCW feud on YouTube and found it intriguing in its own ways. But I don't think I'm not. I wouldn't have minded if they had a second match in the
Well,
WWF, personally. That's
yeah,
me.
I think the point he's making is that probably the second one would never would there may have been a situation where the second one could never have lived up to the first one.
I think that's fair, though. I think anything following something that is iconic like that is never going to really to follow on. It's like, say, the Star Wars. I looked at the DVDs are right in front of me. The Star Wars trilogy and the prequels. It's not going to be better just because you've come back to it.
Yeah, you have to really work at it and come up with original ideas and really, you know, and get lucky in certain, you know, there are a lot of components that come into it, but just putting that together isn't, you know, a guarantee for anything better. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, my understanding is that there were rumors at the time that WrestleMania 7, the original plan was Hogan, Warrior, and then Warrior didn't really do that well as champion, so they went with the Hogan Slaughter idea. And that, you know, didn't really do well either. But, I mean, I think it would have been, I don't think there's any way it would have been as good, but I think it could have been good and it could have been memorable. You know, I think it's going to be interesting because, you know, now we have the, you know, we have Roxina Part 2, and whether that's going to be able to feel as big as the first one, even though the first one, it's hard for me to say because the people who I know don't regard it as much of a match, and the fans that I interact with more, you know, hardcore fans don't consider it that great of a match. But I don't know whether your average fan was disappointed in it or not.
Yeah, it again comes back to the point of, you know, you're going back to the well again for something that was so highly either anticipated or is highly thought of, and does that automatically diminish what the chances of catching lightning in a bottle again? And I think with the case of The Rock and Cena, I would agree that the match wasn't amazing, but there's a potential that they could. There's a potential still this one could be better. It could be laid out better. It could go the other way. I think we have to wait and see.
Yeah.
But I think in the case of, say, The Rock or Hulk Hogan, and to get back to the question, Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior, a potential WWF rematch, it could have gone either way. But I think, and I wouldn't have minded because I like that kind of stuff, but I think that you probably wouldn't have gotten it. You probably wouldn't have gotten something that as memorable as their original meeting.
Yeah, I agree. It would have been difficult to pull that off for sure. This one isn't so much a question, but it was a theory that I really liked, and it's from Adam Hastings at Gas Tank Adam. He thinks that it's one of a few performances that are so close to fourth wall breaking in WWE, because the idea that Rock is the heel, but he's not evil or just plain bad. It's more that he's trolling to get back at his own fans. He's sort of acting like a bad person, but he's not necessarily meant to be a bad person. And I think that's sort of an interesting idea. I don't know if I entirely agree with it, but I wanted to kind of share that with you and see what you thought.
It is interesting. I'm trying to see how that works, and now that I'm thinking about it more, I can see what the person is getting at. Because The Rock is really just still being The Rock. It's the people who have changed their opinion on him.
Yeah.
It is an interesting theory. I don't think it's quite what they were intending. I think they were just rolling with the punches, but it is interesting. I think had this happened in 2013 or 2003 and trolling was more well known, it probably would have come up at some point.
Sure, sure. Well, I see it as more, I think his perception of it applies better to the part of the feud before the match, but again, I think that with the finish, him being actively involved with Vince and spending that alliance and doing nefarious things to to Hogan, you know, via Vince. I think that is more of not just being, you know, not just being mean for the fans' sake, but that's more engaging in actively evil behavior.
Oh yeah, that definitely ties it into a traditional good versus evil
Yeah.
wrestling logic because, you know, Vince McMahon is was at the time the go-to. You want to be a bad guy? You're aligned with Vince McMahon. You're bad.
Sure.
This is how we signal it.
Sure. And I think that you know, obviously that kind of harkens back to the Brett turn. That's another turn where it was, you know, he specifically talks about the fans changing, and this is his response to the fans changing, is that he's going to change, or that he's not even necessarily changing, but he is going to attack the people that they care about now, who he views all as evil people. And it's not quite the same, but it's another turn that is precipitated by fan reaction, and this clearly is one. And obviously, and of course, the funny thing is that The Rock's first turn, you know, was very much, you know, you know, he cites the "Die Rocky, Die" chants, and he cites that the fans, you know, turned their backs on him in, you know, his initial heel turn in '97. So it's.
He's very his,
You
sorry.
know, go ahead.
His very his very existence is either a good guy or a bad guy is very much dictated not by what the company wants him to do, but what the crowd thinks of him, which is a unique thing about The Rock.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I mean, you know, obviously crowd reaction dictates how they treat a lot of people, but it rarely does it, is it so heavily played out actually in, you know, in the narrative.
Yeah.
All right. Next is K Sawyer Paul at KSP underscore me asks, Hogan Rock Part 2, Austin Rock Part 3, or Rock's amazing bad guy character only lasting 2 months, which of those three were the most disappointing thing? You want to go first?
Sure, what the options are Hogan Rock
Hogan
Part
Rock Part
2.
Two, Austin Rock Part Three, or the fact that Rock's amazing bad guy run was only 2 months or so.
I think it's the fact that The Rock's run as a bad guy was so short. There was probably more mileage you could have gotten out of that, but I would think that it, due to his increasing commitments outside of wrestling, you probably weren't going to get it, but it would be nice to have had at least 6 months, if not, of him being bad guy
Yeah,
Rock.
I mean, it was a great run because obviously there was this, and then it set up the feud with Austin, which I enjoyed, and the match at WrestleMania, maybe slightly below expectations, but I still think it's a pretty strong match, and a good, you know, a good wrap up of their feud, a good wrap up to Austin's career, even though we didn't know it at the time, but certain, you know, it was a nice way for him to have to go out, even though, you know, he went out, you know, very young in wrestling terms. And then he had the Goldberg feud, which was more mixed, but I enjoy the match and just the just actually seeing Goldberg, you know, interact with a WWF wrestler, and for that feud to kind of, you know, be one of the last culminations of the WCW versus WWE story. I mean, it wasn't really actively that, but it was, but those were obviously the two sides of that character, and there was still that dynamic, you know, a few years after WCW was out of business. You know, I get into that a lot, and as kind of a big Goldberg fan, although weirdly I only became a Goldberg fan sort of years after his career, but anyway, you know, I think that I really enjoy what they have. It would have been great for it to last long, and I don't think. I mean, I guess Hogan Rock is a disappointment, you know, compared to the expectations, but we've kind of been over that. And I think Austin Rock 3 is pretty good, so I would agree with your answer.
I really don't. I would say that we've already talked about the match, obviously, and Austin Rock 2 Hour 3. I don't really remember all that much. I just remember that it was Austin's last match. I haven't seen it in years, so I can't really comment on it.
Yeah, it's a little slow, but other than that, I think it's a strong match. So, and we have two more. One from Razor at Kickout Blog. Was there anything left for them to do a Rock Hogan 3?
They probably could have found a way. I mean, I don't know if there really was much else to do, but they probably could have found some way somehow if it was possible to get them together. They would have, and the right circumstances. But I can't think off the top of my head what those circumstances could be. It just seemed to fit the moment, I think, for this to happen, because The Rock was available, the crowd were turning on him a little bit, Hogan was available, they could use it as a conduit to get to the WrestleMania match. But I can't see how a third Rock Hogan match would have come about, but I think it probably could have happened if they were able to make it happen, if they wanted to make it happen.
Yeah. There really was no opportunity, but you know, I'm sure they could have found a reason as well. What would have been interesting would if they had decided to bring Hogan back at WrestleMania 20, and then they had him team with Rock and Foley against Evolution.
That could have been interesting. Yeah. Actually,
that would have taken that would have taken sort of the disadvantage the Rock and Sock connection had, and maybe a little bit of that story, but. You know, you would have had Hogan and Flair on opposite sides at a WrestleMania, which would have been kind of cool. And, you know, I mean, it certainly wasn't a necessary addition, and I'm not saying it really fit the story, but, you know, if you're going to kind of do something with the two, that's sort of the immediate thing that pops into mind, which isn't the match between them, but, you know, involves them both.
I think that's, in some cases, the natural progression of any of those sort of long series of matches. Eventually, they partner up at some
sure.
point. So that could have been interesting.
Yeah. Some sort of thing where the two of them were in a team, although they'd obviously teamed up a bit after WrestleMania 18, and Kane was sort of involved in that too, sort of feuding with the NWO. But I don't remember anything memorable coming out of that in particular.
I think Kane did a promo.
Yeah, he did like a wacky Hulk Hogan imitation type thing, I think, or something along those lines. He was like, I think he was the Kane-a-maniac, maybe.
I think is that where the Kane-a-night came out
yeah,
of?
Yeah, maybe, yeah, yeah. So, that Kane, he's certainly a malleable character.
He definitely is.
Yeah. All right, so the last one is from Brandon Stroud, at Mr. Brandon Stroud. Wondering if could Sylvan become a legit WWE star, or was he doomed to being Boy Maurice from the start? Nice Boy Maurice reference. That's good. I like that. That's good. So I went ahead and watched a Sylvan match from it was pronounced Sylvan. I just remember now. It match from I believe 2006, heading into WrestleMania. It was from Velocity. It was Sylvan wrestling a no name. He was wearing he had sort of like Alex Wrighty type techno music, and he did a very average I'm French Canadian, I'm great, and you don't have appreciation for Quebec type thing. This was post La Resistance. Basically. He looked very generic, and I don't think he had the type of body language or the type of facial expressions or was anything special on the microphone or in the ring. He was very, very – wasn't terrible, but was just sort of average and bland, and he wasn't as good as Alex Wright, so if that tells you anything.
Well, I don't think I ever saw him in a match. My watching of wrestling, for reasons of not having access to actually watching it, sort of curtailed me seeing much of anything between this around this time, around 2003 to 2006 or so, or 7. And I don't think I ever saw a Sylvain Grenier match. But I think the reason why he existed and the why, you know, La Resistance existed was because at the time it was, you know, the French were the French were easy bad guy targets for contemporary reasons.
Yeah, for their opposition to the Iraq War, which Americans somehow took offense to. So
yes, that's why pretty much why he they existed, and that's why his shelf life was so short. And apparently he wasn't that good either, or wasn't that remarkable either. So he probably amounted to about as much as he was going to amount to.
Yeah, I do think it is interesting that they introduced him with Vince, and then he went away from Vince so quickly. I think maybe they'd have given him a little bit more with Vince. Maybe he would have come out of that a little hotter, but I don't know. That's just sort of a guess.
He seems a bit of a means to an end, really, in his entire career.
Right.
In the WWE.
Exactly. So, yeah, he, I don't know if he still wrestles or not, but I'm going to look now and see if he still wrestles.
I think the other Rene Dupree still does.
Yeah,
I don't know about
He lasted through 2007. Apparently was in ECW for a while, so... and he reformed the original La Resistance with Rene Dupree, but that didn't last long apparently. So, and his last match he lost to Kane under his old model gimmick. So, which apparently did. So he did some indies and doesn't seem to, at least according to Wikipedia, nothing is mentioned after 2007. So there you go.
He vanished.
He did. He is gone. So Sylvain, if you're out there, we don't think a whole lot of you, but maybe you're a good guy. So that'd be cool.
Hopefully you are happy and fulfilled, whatever you're doing.
Exactly.
Now.
Yes. Thank you. Well put. So anything else? Anything else you can think of to mention?
About the match, not particularly. Okay. No, I think we've covered all the ground.
All right. Well, do you want to let everyone know about the Unemployed Historian?
Sure. While I'm here, I might as well. The Unemployed Historian is a web series. It comes out usually every 2 weeks or so. The basic premise is it's video. And I review historical films, type of films we've looked at so far. We've looked at Braveheart, Michael Collins, The Patriot, 300, The Birth of a Nation, which was quite interesting because it not only is a historical film on a historical subject, but it's a very pivotal film in history.
Yeah.
Ed Wood, Chaplin, the recent one is starting a literary history figures month of videos. It's Tom and Viv. It's about T.S. Eliot and his wife. It's informative and entertaining is what I try to go for. And it's lighthearted. It's about, we look at the films, we discuss that. I discuss the real events behind it, fill in some of the gaps, additional context, and hopefully there are some jokes in there, and hopefully there's some insight in there, and people enjoy them, and people seem to do enjoy them. And you can see it on theunemployedhistorian.wordpress.com, on nerdvice.com, and you can probably find me tweeting about them at TLHobo.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the program. And I say I do really enjoy The Unemployed Historian, and I haven't seen the Birth of a Nation episode, though. I need to check that one out because that one I studied that in college, so I'm interested to see your take on that. And
I studied in college too, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah, there you go. I had a film studies minor in college, so I'm a big movie fan. So, but thank you so much for being on the program, and everyone, of course, you can. Check us out at WrestleSpective.com. We're Facebook at WrestleSpective, Facebook and Twitter, both slash WrestleSpective. And please, you know, we would love if you left a review on iTunes to help us to help increase our visibility. The more ratings we get and reviews we get, the more people can find us easily. So if you like the show, even if you don't like the show, which it's odd that you would be listening this far in and not like the show, but if for some reason you don't and you really just want to rate it badly, I accept your decision. I'm not a big fan of the idea, but I understand, you know, you gotta be you gotta be honest. But more likely you'll want to rate it highly and write nice things. So that would be appreciated. And, so yeah, and we're also Stitcher is a place you can find us as well. You know, so we're everywhere. Just you know, if you go to the Google machine and type in Wrestlespective, and you'll find all the things you need, if nothing else. So, thanks again, everyone, for listening, and keep checking us out, and have a wonderful day.